All right. This is the second lecture of the day, October 31st, 1955, 4th London, ACC. Let's cover with great rapidity now the various things which an auditor must do before he audits. Before he audits. One, he should be trained. Two, he should know what he was trained in. Three, he should have some appreciation of the various goals of the organization which trained him. Not because he himself has to subscribe uniformly to those goals, but he really should know what those goals are. And number four, he should have a preclear. This sounds idiotic that we should put some of these items in, but many auditors around who have been trained don't have preclears. There's many a guy who has no real understanding of the goals of Scientology, and he still has had something that approximates training. But these are important concerns to the auditor, both of them. Now, one of the first things an auditor should do then is get some training. All right, what is auditor training? Auditor training is a dual sort of thing. It's two things. One of those things, first and foremost, is an understanding of the subject itself in his own frame of reference. Not in my frame of reference, but in his. Now, there are many chaps, very good chaps, who have been, in the past, interested in the field of healing. And they have been taught certain tenets in the field of healing. And these tenets are, to them, stable data. They know they have worked from time to time. You would be surprised how many types of healing work. Anybody in any field of healing would be amazed how many things can be done with almost any field of healing. You know that? So that you yourself, as a trained auditor, should have a high level of tolerance for other fields of healing. Now, Scientology is not a field of healing. Now, that sounds strange, but it's not a field of healing. It is a science of knowingness, and on a greater level of understanding, that means a science of life. Now, if you have a science of life, we discover that there is only one aspect to the field of life known as healing. That's just one aspect of living. Let me call to your attention a considerable oddity in Route 2, put in there backwards so that it'll be booby-trapped, just out of my own cussedness, are four processes. I've forgotten their numbers offhand. One of them, the first one mentioned, is pan-determinism. The next one, in chronological order in Route 2, the next one is fighting. The next one in chronological order is must and must not happen again. And the next one in chronological order is repair. The proper order of running these, since these four make a whole process, is one, repair. Two, mustn't happen again. Three, fighting. And four, pan-determinism. And you would run them in this order on a preclear. And it's quite interesting that these are quite workable processes. They are extremely interesting processes because a preclear who is trying to mend himself very, very often cannot mend a thing. It could happen also that an auditor who is trying to mend preclears could not mend to any great degree himself. This could happen, you see. And this would give him a great oddity. This would give him a half understanding of the subject. It has not done anything for him, but he has seen it objectively do things for others. But this data he cannot trust because the first dynamic is omitted in the line of data. Therefore, he has no real reality on Scientology. In very many regimens of healing, it is considered necessary for the practitioner to be subjected to the method of healing which he is studying. This is not possible in the field of psychiatry, or every psychiatrist would have a prefrontal lobotomy. But it is possible in psychoanalysis, and is done in psychoanalysis. There must be a subjective reality on psychoanalysis before the psychoanalyst can attempt in any way, shape, or form to go on. Now, the upsetting thing about psychoanalysis is that it specializes in something known as valence shifting. It specializes in this field. It feels that to heal somebody, you must of necessity gain a transference. Now, you may or may not be a student of psychoanalytic processes, but if you are, I would thoroughly recommend your reading the works of Sigmund Freud, particularly his 28 lectures. Those are very important, since his words and works have been filtered through so many other schools that it's quite difficult to know exactly what he was getting at. But in its pure form, psychoanalysis was quite workable. Quite workable. It was more workable than people had before. And it became shifted. Now, why did it become shifted? It's because it didn't work here and there. See, there was an unworkability showed up, and somebody quite honestly and sincerely tried to alter that unworkability to a more workable state. And so we had other schools of psychoanalysis appearing. The oddity continues when we investigate the relative findings. Evidently, the Freudian clinic originally produced better results than were later produced. And evidently, the results have been on the decline over a long period of years. It's been around, you know, for over half a century. And other schools which came up were Jungian, Adlerian, and about two more who were students of Freud himself. Now, these men who started another school had another reality, subjectively. Now, there's no argument here about starting another school of Scientology. There is no thought about this. But there is this. Could these men make psychoanalysis work as well as the Freudian clinic? Not Freud, since he evidently did a bang-up job. But did it work as well, did these things work as well as the clinic in Vienna in, let us say, 1898? If they didn't work as well, then it must have been that something was lost. Must have been there, see? There must have been a reinterpretation of some basic material. Now, when you have a loosely woven body of material which has certain tenets which may or may not be pervasive throughout the race, which may or may not be dependent upon the social order in which they were founded, and which are not clearly and scientifically laid down and defined, there is a great chance that out of the random data contained therein, of omitting the datum that made the people well, you see. So we would have to handle all of this data slavishly, actually, every time that we went through psychoanalysis in order to keep the gains up. Otherwise, we're liable to drop some of the material. Now, if somebody was taught directly by Freud, and if Freud did know his basics thoroughly, and there's no reason to suppose he didn't, then we would believe that when we changed over, we either picked up some new basics or lost some old ones or both, with nobody really to know whether or not they were the effective basics. This would be then a serious thing, wouldn't it? But it would only be done if somebody was intensely dissatisfied with the results of psychoanalysis that was being practiced. This is why those splinter groups would occur. Now, today, if we are able to obtain results as good as the results of, let us say, a Ahasi clinic, as they operate, as it is operating now in Washington, if we are to obtain results as good as that and uniformly as that, we could very probably improve on those results if we could obtain the results as good as that. This is very fascinating because it lays down a certain limitation, which is a very healthy one. Let's obtain results as good as Scientology can obtain and then alter it. You're complete liberty to alter it in either case. Nobody is laying it down with a club. But if it's going to be changed, let it obtain the results it can obtain first. Now, this then says that there will be a certain level of activity which will go on which does not obtain the results being obtained by a clinic and which then alters. You see, this is another thing. And that thing would occur because there was no subjective reality on Scientology. See, it would occur. An obsessive change or something of this character would enter in. Now, when I say a clinic or the HGC, the results being obtained by the HGC, I mean just that. What are their weekly test results? If you can obtain these weekly test results and you are obtaining them, then by all means try to better them. Then by all means. Those are pretty good test results. But an individual, if he were trained, well, theoretically, could obtain those test results. See? He theoretically could obtain those. And if he could obtain those, then he has something to improve. But if he's not improving those, let me invite your attention to this fact. He's back to the bottom where Scientology started. He may be missing several things which actually exist in Scientology. He may be bypassing this, and he is losing a great deal of hard-won territory. Now, anybody is at liberty to do anything they please with Scientology. Nobody is laying down a terrific, tough regimen. We are doing this, all of us. We are trying to make available all that we know. And we're trying to bring an auditor's skill up as high as we can bring it. But only through his own choice. If he feels that his skill is not going in that direction, then he is, of course, at liberty to do whatever he pleases with what he knows up to that point. But if he does not obtain the results which can be obtained in auditors in a clinic, then there's possibly something missing in his information. It may be something terribly basic and fundamental. And it may be only this, that he was trained in a regimen, a very exacting regimen, maybe over a course of many years, in things which are, rightly or wrongly, in controversy with some of the data of Scientology. Therefore, the individual, in trying to digest Scientology and in trying to train Scientology, has some responsibility. The responsibility is simply this, trying to discover where in Scientology there is any data at all which clarifies a former field of training in which he was engaged. And only in this wise will he be able to have a comfortable mind. He can then relax. If he finds no data in Scientology which makes clearer the information he already has at his fingertips, we must assume then that there is such a wide gulf between these two subjects, the one which he studied before and the one he is studying now, that there's no reconciliation of these two subjects at all. If there's no reconciliation of them, let me assure you that his former training will prevail. It is the basic on the track. See that? And it may very well be that the subject in which he was trained was more workable than Scientology. See? We'll just give you that. That's a possibility. That subject was more workable. A possibility we must never throw aside. And I want to tell you why we must never throw it aside. Is because the fields of healing themselves today have no idea what can be done with Scientology. Broadly, the AMA, the BMA, the APA, these other organizations do not officially know what can be done with Scientology. Therefore, we in Scientology can assume that we may not officially know what can be done by the BMA, the APA, and the rest of them. You see, it'd be an unreasonable assumption, then, just to throw aside homeopathy, naturopathy, bloodless surgery, chiropractic, all sorts of fields of healing, just throw them aside and say, well, they're all no good. We can do better than all those fields. There's a possibility, a distinct possibility, that they, at the emergency level at which the public works particularly, are more effective than what we are doing in Scientology. See, it's very, very possible. And it would continue possible until they themselves established their own results and made them available to anyone. Now, in view of the fact that they haven't done that in the majority of cases, does not mean that they're ineffective. But until they themselves do that, they are in question then, aren't they? As far as we're concerned, we know what we can do. We know that we can do it better than what we have seen. But I'll tell you where we get the major opinion of that. Where we get the majority opinion is because we get their failed cases. We don't ever get their successful ones. Now, you got that? They get our failed cases. They never get our successful ones. And so, one to another, there is no clear, well-understood basis of who is doing what, how well. Now, all of this would be very important to you and would be striking at the very roots of why you're here, except for one thing. Except for one interesting thing. The APA, the BMA, the AMA, the naturopathic, homeopathic, chiropractic, and any other healing organization on the face of Earth is not doing what we're doing. You know why? I wish this could take place. I wish this could be broadly true. It's because we are studying life, and we are trying to reach into every nook and cranny of existence and see if we can't pull it up into a greater level of livingness. That's what we're trying to do. We are not completely, slavishly dedicated to healing. I want to call your attention again to this four-process scale. Repair, must not happen again, fighting, and pan-determinism. Do you realize that you leave the field of healing at once that you settle repair? Let's suppose we had just run the first one and we had everybody all settled in the field of repair. What could you repair, we ask him. That's fine. What else could you repair? Fine. What else could you repair? And we keep this up until it's flat. And do you know we've then left the field of healing? And we're into the field of experience. Must and mustn't happen again. You know where these four processes come from? It's because when I ran repair, must and mustn't happen again turned up in a good many cases. We have been just arduously exact in a great deal of our research, very arduous. And a great deal of it is empirical research. And where it fits into theory, that's fine. Where it doesn't fit into theory, we throw the theory away. We are not dedicated to theory. We're dedicated to what works. And after we'd had an individual finally decide that there were many things he would let happen again, we found out that he was interested in fighting. What could he fight? Well, this gets very interesting. Because as soon as he was satisfied that he could fight a great many things, and remember, we settle disease with repair. When we got up to fight, we might have a re-echo of some of these ills and illnesses, but not in the main at all. We'd find ourselves more or less dealing with a militaristic attitude on the part of the Free Clare. You know, he got organized and also can fight this and fight that. And he comes up out of this on what could you fight, and we discover what could you pan-determine. What enemy of yours would you be willing to have fight you? This kind of an attitude. And he climbs up on top of this. Well, look, if we flattened repair, we would be out of the field of healing. And we are still in another field. We're in the field of experience. And if we're in the field of experience, we have now entered the field of education. And we are not now living with these four processes only. We are not now living, if you please, on the same plane as a healing organization. We're going to get this individual so that he can stop or start at will various actions. So he's willing to experience or not experience at will. If you could get an airplane pilot completely relaxed on the subject of crashes, he'd never crash. And it looks to me like we're out of the field of healing right now. But we're into that, and into the field of experience. Now we go up to this next one. We're into the field of games as they exist on a fighting level. And so we're in sports, at least. On its higher level, on its lower level, in militarism or some such thing. Well, pandeterminism looks completely vast. But it isn't completely vast. It is simply making life live more. And we're into life itself. So if at any moment we consider ourselves a healing organization, we're going to pin ourselves on the first level of these processes. At any moment then that we consider ourselves uniformly an educational organization, we are likewise going to be limited. And if we pinned ourselves there, we would find ourselves in contest with the London County Council and the Educational Board of Tennessee and so on. These would be the organizations that we would have as opposite numbers, don't you see? And if we went up to this next one on fighting and so forth, well, we'd have to do with football teams and coaches and cricket matches and war consuls and international relations and all kinds of interesting bric-a-brac. But we certainly wouldn't have very much as an opposite number, because I don't know anybody, any organization, unless it's the coaches of the United Kingdom or something, their club, that would be uniformly interested in this level. And we have at that point escaped having opposite numbers in the society. As far as pandeterminism is concerned, it would be absolutely necessary to step up into pandeterminism at this point and be tolerant of it. And the second we did that, we would find what? We would find there's a great many organizations around that needed some help. They could use what we know. And what kind of organizations are they? Well, right down here again, not saying that the healing orders or healing as an activity is the lowest order on the scale, very far from it. There are dozens of harmonics on these upper ones that are lower than healing. It's a pretty high and noble activity, actually. But we would find that we could assist them with what we know. But we won't be able to assist them with what we know at all unless they have a better idea of what we're doing. And it will only be possible for them to have a better idea of what we're doing if they can study what we're doing and take some part of it and fit it in with what they know. Because they know what they know, remember. And what they know is pretty sharp and clear. They know if a man's pumping his blood out on the sand, you don't stop that bleeding, he's going to die. You know that you don't audit an engram at this point. See? They become very impatient of it because they are called on in the emergencies of life. They know various activities, take obstetrics, for instance. It's all very well for an auditor to go ahead and give a very fine delivery, but he ordinarily does attend at a delivery, and they have here and there throughout the world with great success, only after they've studied medical textbooks on obstetrics. See, they've looked them all over. And they have specialized to some degree in somebody else's knowledge, and then through their own knowledge of birth engrams and a lot of other things, and the part that fear plays in it and so forth, they have conditioned the mother. So they have actually added what they know about obstetrics to the basic information. The basic information was medicine, and it belonged to medicine. So here's curiosity. Now, we have not been, in the past, very tolerant of stupidity. The only way we got any place was by being intolerant of stupidity, don't you see? But this thing is a self-limiting mechanism. Unless we ourselves wish to pin ourselves somewhere on the scale, irrevocably pin ourselves, we'd better be learned to be pan-determined at any point on the scale. At will, see? And if we do, we have another game. And it's a game, really, nobody's ever really played before. we're sort of making up the rules as we go along, because the game of having a science of life around is something that's ordinarily been held down by a priesthood that bent it to their own desires and hocus-pocused it up. And when you see the lotus flowers unfolding, then the Ides of March are on the left-hand side of the new-risen orbit, and therefore you must drop a couple of gold coins in the poor box. And, you know, if they did know about life, they didn't let anybody else in on it. We're playing a new game because we're letting somebody else in on it, don't you see? We're not operating as a secret society, trying to pull power out of a society just by letting what we know remain unknown, which is a very fine way for an individual or an organism to perish. Wonderful way to perish. So therefore, if our knowledge is to be available, then we must experience for the first time this in training itself. And we must learn that it's possible in training itself for an individual to learn Scientology without unsettling everything else he learns. We don't have to then do an informationectomy on this individual. In other words, we don't have to brainwash him before we start. Now, if we do have on our hands a science of life, then we have something that is fascinating. It hasn't existed, you see. We have something that's fascinating. We have something, then, that will clarify any field of learning. No matter how dull or how good that field of the past has been, we actually have something that could clarify that field. And that's the first thing we must understand in training. Let's look at the third dynamic to arrive at an answer with the first. If we don't let medicine or psychology fit in our stable data with their regimen, we're going to knock out of existence the only bodies which can be inhabited in practice in this entire society. No matter what the devil they think of us, we don't care. If they think badly of us now, they'll think well later, if we adapt ourselves to a decent policy on the thing. It's been our fault or my fault, not anybody else's, you see. So psychology believes the brain does all the thinking. You still show them a tremendous category of data out of Scientology and ask them if any one of those data can be of service to them. Are any of them true by the light of what they know? And the next thing you know, they will integrate what they know on this other and arrive at some inevitable conclusions, which oddly enough are not our conclusions, but which are slumbering conclusions with which these people are living every day of their lives. And because those conclusions are asleep in them, their gains are limited. Do you see? Now, if it'd be just as sensible to go off on machine gunning of every body in existence, because bodies get in trouble, and bodies get thetans in trouble, it'd be just as sensible to blow them all into their graves because they got thetans in trouble as to try to suppress, execute, supplant, or knock out of existence the stable fields of healing which man already has. See? And it's just... the only reason I'm talking about this morning is just so that you can see what I mean by training an auditor. It would be equally as sensible to shoot somebody because all he knew was naturopathy and couldn't seem to get the word on Scientology. And so we shoot him from guns. We dismiss him from class. We say he's not a good auditor. He will never be trained. He will never recognize what he's doing. He will always make mistakes. These people are untrainable. Now, I know I have made this in an emergency situation. A couple of times I've said chiropractors are actually beyond reach as far as we were concerned. And they were at that time. We evidently couldn't train a chiropractor. We would bring them in and we'd try to train them and they just wouldn't train. And we would say, oh, no. And quit. We didn't know this one fact. And wherever we've made a mistake in training, we've made it right here. Right here on this line. We've never permitted him to integrate the data of Scientology with the data he already knew and had experienced in the field of chiropractic. We never permitted him to be a whole being. We tried to shoot the chiropractor and resurrect in his place a Scientologist. It'll never work. won't function. Now, I gag around occasionally about the stupidity of certain fields. The militarist. Still, all he knows is militarism. Let's take naturopathy. I'm sure naturopathy has made a few boo-boos, just as I am sure that in our early days we made an awful lot of them, too. I'm sure that they have very short sights on a great many things, but so did we have very short sights when we were going toward healing with Dianetics. So, in training, wherever we have tried to shoot the naturopath or the physiotherapist or the Christian Scientist, kill him dead and put in his place a Scientologist just as abruptly as that, we have failed in training because we haven't ever brought a whole individual to the status of auditor. We have only brought part of a guy. True enough, this guy may go on, do some of his work. We've never given him a chance to make a bridge. We have asked for a sudden, terrific change. And one of the things we have told him that was wrong, and which I'm telling you is wrong right now, and we've already discussed some of these things, is one of our own concepts is that we were a healing organization. We had that more or less for a long time. And it's not true. You see? The second that we ourselves assume, from the standpoint of our training, that we are more pan-determined than that, that we can produce different goals than healing organizations can, and we do, and the best goals that we produce now are not healing goals at all. They're in preventive illness more than they are in curative illness. We ourselves then, perforce, must build a bridge for the guy between what he knows and what we can show him. Not by staggering him with what we can do, since one of these days I imagine we'll be getting good enough that we will be hotter and hotter and faster. I myself have done this sort of thing to two or three doctors of medicine and just knocked them completely out of present time. Well, for instance, one of the tricks that I can always do is turn somebody's fever up to about 104 or 105 and turn it off again with no liability. All you do is find a high fever engram and run it out of the preclear. In the middle of it, he will have a fever practically as high as he had. It's quite interesting. It's fascinating. This fascinates medicine. It shows him, however, that the mechanism of fever, to some slight degree, is under the auditor's control. But it actually tells him a lie. This looks magical to him because he doesn't know the anatomy of the engrammer that contains all the perceptions, inclusive of the fever. And that we're really turning an old fever on again and turning it off. We're not being fair with him. It looked to him as though we said, hocus pocus, do this, do that, and he didn't understand any of these commands, and all of a sudden the fellow's fever went up, and he took it with a thermometer, and he found out it was up, and he took it later, and it was off. And it was off predictably. We went through some mechanical hocus pocus and produced this result without letting him in on a stable datum. That the energy pictures, mental image pictures, he would rather call them, that these pictures exist and contain all perceptions. And we showed him the other demonstration of fever without letting him in on the why of it. Now, he's perfectly prepared to have people looking at mental image pictures. Mental imagery. He's perfectly prepared to have people look at this. He is some acquaintance with it. If we were going to give him such a demonstration as this, the only fair way to do it would be to ask him whether or not he could accept the fact that people occasionally have these mental imagery pictures. Right? It'd be the fair thing to do. Is he any acquaintance with these? And he says, no. Well, what would we do then? We'd have to back up a little bit further. Have you any acquaintance with any existing theory that disease is sometimes monitored by thought? Yes. Yes, he has some acquaintance with that. Have you any acquaintance with the idea that people can become depressed by some incident in their lives and then become ill? He's liable to have reality on this. Oh, he's had this happen. He's seen people do this. Somebody left this girl, and she collapsed. Well, that certainly was mental stress, wasn't it? And she became sick after it. You see what we'd have to back up to? We'd have to back up to a bridge to his own experience. Now we could say, well, all right, now you've seen that. Now, what could happen? What could happen from that? Is it possible that some structural material is here which actually makes this come about rather routinely? Is it possible there's some structure, some mechanics, so that the individual is all right, has an unfortunate experience, and then becomes ill? Is there possibly an existing bridge of mechanics in between those two things? And boy, would your guy get interested. He'd say, yeah, well, wait a minute. There must have been something made this happen. Even if he'd never thought of it before, something must have made this occur. And lay the data out to him and say, all right, that is the bridge as we see it. Now, can you find it any place in your people? Have you any experience on a lock? You any experience at all on one of these little light image pictures? Well, we could show him that. And then we could show him experience on a heavier one and a heavier one. If we really wanted to lead him through the entirety of structure, we could conclusively let him add to the structure of bone and blood, the structure of the electronics of the body. And that's all we're teaching. This is a brand new field, structurally. The body electronic structure is something that people have had some cognizance of for some time. There's something called radiesthesia. But because its exactness of measurement is not up to engineering, the engineer himself has regarded it with some suspicion. Furthermore, because it couldn't be shown on his meters, which he had plenty of, the usual practitioner did not accept it very much. These meters read with considerable precision, you understand. They showed people doing this and doing that. All kinds of interesting electronic gimmicks are afloat today in fields of healing. Now, to use a man's own meters and show him some new phenomena on those meters would simply graduate him upscale to knowing more about meters. Electronic structure is a brand new subject discovered in the field of Scientology, suspected in other fields. See, it was suspected, some data existed on it, but there was no solid knowledge of its standards, no solid knowledge of its existence. No demonstrable knowledge of its existence. There's this thing called anchor point structure. There's this thing called the engram reactive mind system. There's this thing called the somatic mind system. You see, there are these systems, these methodologies of energy, which do exist. But these are all structure, aren't they? And for a man that is oriented in the field of structure entirely, we would have to build to some degree a structural bridge, wouldn't we? And he'd have to have reality on every one of them. In other words, the fellow would have to be hand-coached and not given a bunch of data which would simply send him staggering and drive him away, telling him parascientological stuff before he knows that there's anything associated whatsoever with his own field would be an unkindness, not Scientology, since you can't be unkind to Scientology, but an unkindness to him. So, what about training? Training, then, requires, if an individual is very, very well trained, that he have a bridge between his own learning and experience and livingness and the data which is offered him in Scientology. And if such a bridge is built for anyone, I've just been talking about healing, you understand, because it's an exaggerated case. It's something that considers itself and is a parallel thing to a bunch of the information. But how about the average guy? How about the fellow who has been educated to be a coach in sports? Oh, this is another guy. This is another guy entirely. Do you know what he believes? He believes that if you exercise enough, if you get enough sleep, you'll be all set. And you know how thoroughly you could unsettle his data? It's just because we haven't seen so much of him that we know so little of him, really. But you know how you could really upset his data? You could just stagger this man. You could knock his props out from underneath. You could take an individual and process him into good physical condition without exercise. And exercise is so questionable as a building mechanism that it will work in reverse in very many cases. The coach has simply selected out of his student body and out of his candidates those people who would improve by exercise, which is a highly specialized class and depends upon this stable datum that you improve by exercise. See? He only got the guys that had that. All right, now let's take the other side of it. Do you know that the American Indian never exercised? He ran his miles and swam his streams and came hand-to-hand fight with antlered elks, with a stone axe, and so forth, and yet at no time would he ever exercise. When Indian got to camp, he sat down. Bang. The squaw did all the work. You never found young bucks around getting their morning, you know? Never did. They just sat there. Ugh. Well, that's interesting that a whole race would be without this stable datum, which yet, in absence of the disease which struck them down, was a physically admirable race. These chaps really had the endurance. They used to run for miles and miles and miles following a deer. Just a steady trot. You know, they only got one arrow into him through the brush. And they just have to run for miles. And finally the deer would drop, or they'd come to grips with him one way or the other, and they'd finish him off, and they had something to eat. They had to do fantastic things. Do you know that a couple of white men in the American history have outrun Indians? And we say then, well, the white man must have been fleeter of foot than Indians. Remember, these two men are famous in America. They outran some Indians. One of them's named Colter, who discovered Yellowstone National Park. And he outran Indians. And everybody says, well, that proves that the white man then is a better runner than Indians are, and that settles it. But we still have Colter, a famous man, amongst an awful lot of men who didn't outrun Indians. So this was a freak. And yet here was a whole race that didn't believe in exercise, and so we'd have this coach struck down by data if he ever looked at the data about the American Indian. He would be unstabilized. Nobody was put into condition. Nobody had to go through various regimens of exercise in order to get competent enough to do this or do that. Something else. It was more likely that an Iroquois went into a dream hut of the secret clan and had some tremendously fascinating dreams about how great and powerful he was and how beautifully he was going to be supported by the spirit of the otter and so on. And he'd come out of there 19 feet tall in good physical condition, having laid around for 2 or 3 days smoking hop. That's an unstabilizing datum to a coach who would believe that you had to train. We can do worse than that. We can do worse than that. We can take a young boy who doesn't know how to drive a car, and by exteriorization and permeation of parts of the car, and now, today, by not knowing parts of the car, by 8C and not knowing this as processes, fix him up so that all he does is look it over and he knows how to drive the car and he could get in and drive it. This is a test which maybe you have yet to make, but you should make it someday, to show how much can be known about the operation of a machine without any study of it whatsoever. Just straight processing directed in the direction of one item of knowingness in the society, and the individual at the end of this winds up an expert on it. One of the more fabulous things, we have a chap right now who never reads the directions of anything. They're extraneous. He doesn't break up equipment. He takes the most complicated equipment you ever saw. And he looks it over, and he sees immediately how it works by permeation, you know, the equipment, and he just knows how it works, and then he goes ahead and runs it. He'd never read the directions of it. It'd be entirely extraneous. And maybe the fellow, he would tell you, that wrote the directions didn't know all there was to know about the machine. He might have omitted some important things, you see. Directions are then not trustworthy. If you knew everything that the designer and builder of the machine knew, that would be different, but not just what the fellow in the front office who writes directions knew. That wouldn't be enough. Maybe a lot more things you can do with this machine. And this fellow all the time is taking a machine and not only making it do what it's supposed to do, but making it do four other things, too. Now, here's an interesting case, isn't it? And we've moved up into the field of education with a vengeance. Well, if we know how to train people, if we can train people by processing, well, for heaven's sakes, we have violated the basic data of the educator, that the person has to sit for many, many years arduously memorizing and never, of course, looking at a live example of what he's studying. This is one of the principal tenets of education of the past, is you never let an engineer go out and look at a bridge. You just had him sit there studying bridges, you know. You never let a fellow go out and investigate sturgeons. You taught him all about sturgeons, about 1500. They were specialists in this, the scholastics. Boy, were they geniuses at this. They'd give the fellow Aristotle, and they'd say, now you read all about sturgeons in Aristotle, you know all about sturgeons. There's several funny jokes current in 1500 about this. Professor is lecturing on sturgeons out of Aristotle, and of course these are the sturgeons of southern waters around Aristotle's hometown, and the sturgeons in the rest of the world are quite different. And he's lecturing on sturgeons there in the lecture classroom, and at that moment, why, a sturgeon from northern waters comes and stands at the door and tries to attract the professor's attention, who is lecturing on all the sturgeons there are, you understand. And he tries to attract the professor's attention, and finally does, and the professor says, if some of you gentlemen will take that strange beast out, I will continue my lecture on sturgeons. This, a typical joke of the University of 1500. But it was so far off reality that you knew a specialized thing. You knew Aristotle's idea of natural history, for you knew nothing. Well, you could get a fellow hammered down in training to a point where he believed he was studying Ron Hubbard's or his instructor's idea of the human mind that had no reality on human minds, because remember, he's looked at them. He thinks, or he has looked at them. He would have to know that what he knew already was not wasted knowingness in order to utilize any other knowingness on top of it. Therefore, his knowledge of the educated mind or education in action would have to be enormously improved before he could accept scientological type education. Now, we do have a complete technology of education. In training, we have a complete technology. We've said very, very little about it, but it all comes under the heading that there was a confusion. The individual picked out a stable datum in order to begin the alignment of the confusion. As he added other data in this confusion to that stable datum on gradient scales, he constructed an orderly somethingness out of the extant confusion. And that is the educational process. And if an individual is not permitted to do this himself, his power of choice suffers to such a degree that his education becomes worthless to him. And this is a serious situation. A very serious situation. Therefore, he is never able to utilize the data which he has learned or in which he has been trained. He sits there looking at the pre-clear, wondering what he does next, and he has to turn to a textbook which gives the exact command. He cannot handle the theory of it because he's never entered the world, the body, of the knowledge of Scientology. So it would require that you made this bridge for anyone, whether a former educator or any other being. And now what do you know? All beings have lived. So unless they can get a subjective experience, which is to say, add to the clarification of their own experience by knowledge from Scientology, they will never retain their self-determinism in working with Scientology. And Scientology will be denied the tremendous and vast amounts of experience which individuals have won, no matter how hardly, from the business of living. And Scientology will limit Excel very, very exceedingly. So that is about the first thing that an auditor would have to do. He would have to find out if any of the data of Scientology added to any of the data he already had aligned. Could he use any of the data in Scientology to align the data which he already possessed? And if he is unable to do this, he will always thereafter be struggling to understand what he is doing and what the preclear is doing. So there is a bridge here. It's a bridge from every human being to a science of life, not just a science of knowing. And unless that bridge is to some degree built, we have people floundering. Now, there's something else that enters into training, completely aside from anything else, and that is an understanding of what we are trying to do as an organization. Actually, the organization is trying to do what its members are trying to do. And this becomes very difficult to understand sometimes, unless you yourself know pretty thoroughly that man is basically of good intent. The organizations themselves are essentially built with the communication lines in utilization now on Earth. These communication lines are in agreement with a thing called business, a thing called society, a thing called government. And let me assure you, they are then very, very crude communication lines as you would understand them. They are of such a crude order of magnitude that anyone with a little impatience would find himself very impatient with them. Just why you should do all the accounting that is done arduously for the government and not for the management is just one little problem that an organization faces. Here you have people working for months and months and months trying to get things just right for the government, which doesn't even care. So, therefore, you have all sorts of oddities in order to keep organizations running. Now, the other thing that is interesting about an Earth organization is that its income must be slightly greater than its outgo. Its outgo must be slightly less than its income, and that is the first thing you must learn about an organization or an office if you're going to start one. That's this factor of income and outgo, and it doesn't matter how much you spend. That has nothing to do with it. As long as it is spent in the direction of increasing your income proportionately, because you won't have an office at all unless the ratio between outgo and income is where the outgo is less than the income. To understand an organization sometimes requires a great deal of tolerance on the part of the public or the individual auditor. Nearly everybody in connection with the organization, I say nearly everybody because you can always have a completely aberrated boy in the midst someplace or another, is trying his damnedest to make the wheels turn with Scientology on one side of him and the social world on the other side of him with all of its complicated and stupid lines. And it kind of leaves somebody making him feel like he's between the devil and the deep blue sea. He's got his sights all aimed for the stars, and there's an anchor dragon. And somehow or another, an auditor has to learn enough about organizations to be willing to patch up or ride over, whether that organization is his own office, or the main organization Scientology, or some branch organization Scientology, has to know enough about the situation of the difference between the ideal and the real, the ideal and the practical, to be able to make the ideal come true in spite of the terrible state of the practical. See this? And unless he can make that bridge on an organizational basis, what do you know? He'll never be able to tolerate the foibles of his preclear. I'm not setting these things up as a hooker for you. 9 times out of 10, a failure to get the preclear gain is a failure to understand that the preclear also has a concept of the ideal, but the preclear is living with the real. And the real might be pretty darn complicatedly upset and bad. His environment might be absolutely catastrophic from your viewpoint. But nevertheless, we've somehow or other got to let him bridge between this practical thing and this ideal thing. And therefore, we raise his capabilities in the field of the practical. We raise his capabilities then according to his determinism, not according to ours, because he's closer to the practical and we're closer to the ideal. If an auditor could get a concept of himself as being able to tolerate the practical, being able to tolerate that and still keep it moving toward the ideal, whether on a basis of an organization or a society or a preclear, on any dynamic, he would then be able to improve cases with a state of mind which was very relaxed and comfortable. Life, he could say to himself, it is perfectly true, it's bloody awful. It's pretty grim. That's the way it is. Well, an ideal life for the preclear might only be two slices above bloody awful. See? Might be only two tiny steps above it. This fellow is now able to smile when his boss comes in the room. And this is terrific. He's living with a nagging wife and all of her relatives in a one-room flat. But he comes to your group and he finds out that he can now smile when the boss walks into his office. He can be pleasant. He doesn't sit there and shake. And he says to himself, I've made a tremendous gain. He hasn't been able to take care of any of his practical problems. He hasn't buried himself one whit anywhere along the line except this. And this looks like an enormous gain to him. And you're sitting there trying to make this preclear exteriorize and live with the gods, you see? And he's trying to smile when the boss walks in. If you can't tolerate at once the real and still hold your sights on the ideal, you'll have a lot of trouble living with your fellow man and in being an auditor, because you're always being shoved up against the real, whether by an organization, which is just at sixes and sevens most of the time. Mostly Scientology organizations, nobody's willing to do any of the practical work in them. Everybody's too interested in getting a show on the road, you know? And the next thing you know, everybody has got a show nicely on the road except for one thing. Everybody's been arrested by the government for never having reported his taxes. Something stupid like this has occurred. See? Tremendous oversights occur. We get very impatient of the fellows who are really dragging bottom and holding back the clinic and are upsetting things and demanding special attention and all this sort of thing. That's the practical. Let me call your attention to that. That is the practical side of existence. It isn't ideal. That's why it's practical. It's highly impractical. That's why everybody considers it so practical. Money has to be that complicated or it won't have any value at all. It has to be hidden or it won't have any unknown factor to make it worth a nickel. So, here we have the whole subject of business, the society itself, from our viewpoint, utterly bogged in the mud. And one day, we dry off a little place and there's a little square of dry sand that somebody could stand on out of the mud. And the society itself says, gosh, look at that little square of dried sand. First dried sand we've seen all winter. And you say, we haven't got a concrete road running all the way through there yet, so we haven't won. And somebody else looks at it and says, gee whiz, look how you've won. So, two different angles, two different views, two different tolerances. If you don't understand what your preclear considers practical, it isn't very likely that you're going to get him to improve it. And if you yourself aren't in sufficiently good shape to retain the ideal and still work with the practical, then you will come a cropper as an auditor. So I could invite you very clearly to, if you find confusion with Scientology, to make the bridge by looking over the data of Scientology and discovering how any of it can be utilized in what you knew before. not kill yourself off as to what you've been before. And I could give you the invitation then to acquire some subjective data reality, which might be a very great benefit. And when you train people, if you want trained auditors, to always try to make this bridge with people. And for a game, sometimes you can tramp on the toes of other organizations, but remember that they are not data of comparable magnitude. You're actually a bully picking on little boys. And as far as the pre-clear is concerned, he's living in a practical world, and it doesn't look very ideal to you. But that's why you're doing something about it, because it could come closer to the ideal. So you never once lose sight of what the ideal is or lose touch with the real, and you'll win. So these are some very abstract principles, maybe, that an auditor could look at. I'm afraid if he doesn't look at them, we haven't got much chance of winning. Thank you.